Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of The Clippers Beat. This is your host, Nikki Kay. And I just wanted to start off saying it is Monday morning at the time that I am recording this. The Clippers do have a crosstown showdown tonight with the Los Angeles Lakers. I'm looking forward, though. Don't really want to touch upon the dumpster fire that has been bleeding purple and gold. And I want to focus more on the Clippers. And therefore, looking at Friday's matchup, the next matchup the Clippers have, which is hosting the Oklahoma City Thunder. So I invited my near and dear friend, one of my very best friends in this industry, Nick Gallo. He is an all-around renaissance reporter, so to speak, from the inside of the Thunder locker room. He is a writer, sideline reporter, analyst. He does it all, and he does it excellently. So I am so excited to welcome him on to the Clippers Beat. So without much further ado, I welcome Nick Gallo. Nick Gallo, we finally get the Nick and Nikki show.
Here we go. It's finally happening. Let's get it going.
Okay, so where are you right now? Give us the lowdown. What's going on in Thunderland at this very moment?
I am in OKC. The Thunder just completed a road home back-to-back. San Antonio Spurs on the road. It was a loss. And then back home against the Memphis Grizzlies. Last second victory. Russell Westbrook hits a three and then a 19-foot jump shot to go ahead against the Grizzlies. They hold out in the final 40 seconds and snap a four-game losing skid, and now the Thunder heads on the road for four straight games, three of them against Northwest Division teams, so it does not get any easier for the Thunder, now tied with Portland for the third spot in the Western Conference. So it's getting down to the nitty-gritty here in the Western Conference.
Absolutely bonkers from Russell Westbrook. I mean, to be honest, I hopped onto Twitter like in the middle of the game last night, and all I saw was a highlight of him just jacking up some three that went off. Like, I don't think it was even in the box behind, you know.
He did not shoot well last night, but, you know, part of the problem, part of the thing with Russ is he is at his absolute best when he's getting to the rim. And the Grizzlies, they played some zone for quite a bit of the game, some weird matchup man-to-man zone, and they did everything they possibly could to keep Westbrook out of the lane. And that's one of the things they've been really good at all season long, actually, despite the Grizzlies not being a particularly good team. They've been really good at protecting the rim. So Russ really had no driving lanes last night, and without Paul George on the floor, it's just a little bit more difficult to create that spacing that you need to carve out those angles to the rim. All the lobs to Adams and Grant and those guys. I mean, there's the Grizzlies were just camped out in the paint. So as a result, Russ had to settle for some more jump shots. And basically he was just willing them into the rim. He went 4-for-7 in the fourth quarter, which ended up helping his shooting percentage quite a bit. Before that, I think he was just 3-of-13 from the field. So finished up 7-for-20, and you know, they're not going to complain about a win at this stage of the season. It was very ugly, but they got the job done, and you just move on to the next one and hope you play a little bit better in Minneapolis, and we'll see when Paul George comes back. It will probably be sometime on this road trip, but not sure when.
Yeah, that was one of the next questions I was going to ask. Paul George has been listed as questionable recently with his shoulder injury. Any insight? You're guessing somewhere over the next five games, probably?
Yeah, probably sooner rather than later, if I had to guess. I mean, he's going through on-court workouts before games in San Antonio. It was about a 20 to 30-minute workout, so pretty good. But just wasn't able to go on either of these games on the back-to-back. But it's Tuesday in Minnesota, and then Thursday in Portland, Friday in LA against the Clippers, and then Monday in Utah. So my guess would be some point on that road trip, but nothing set in stone. He's just still dealing with that sore right shoulder and is continuing to kind of progress day by day and do a little bit more each day. So Billy Donovan will probably give some type of update tomorrow.
Update, we say it with air quotes, right? Yeah. We all know Billy Donovan.
He's really good at sort of, you know, giving you a little bit of a morsel and then moving to the next media availability when he can give you more.
So the win, ugly, although it may be, puts the Thunder at 39-24 right now. The Clippers also getting a win early Sunday against the Knicks. It was a blowout, 36-29. Both teams are playoff contenders as of now. I mean, obviously the Thunder spot is a little bit more secure, but I just want to talk to you kind of taking a big picture look at what the season has been like from the inside. I mean, Paul George doing insane things, Russell Westbrook taking a little bit of a deferential role. And it really just seems like the team has found a chemistry and rhythm that they didn't have last season. And just unpack that a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, it maybe sounds like a little bit of a cliche, but like there's a real love in the locker room, and that's something that is pretty precious. Even guys like Raymond Felton like have recognized that. And there was sort of this stretch in January, early February, teams playing really, really well. And guys are openly talking about just the connection and the bond that the team has, particularly set from the top with Russ and Paul George. It just, there seems to be such a level of trust and bond that really permeates through the team. The guys genuinely happy for each other, and it can be tough, particularly like as the season comes down towards the end. You get guys sacrificing minutes. Patrick Patterson's now out of the rotation.
Wow.
But there's no, you know, there's no problems. Yeah, Markieff Morris is in, and you're trying to get a guy like that acclimated and involved. And but he's coming in saying like, I'm not trying to ruffle any feathers here. I'm not trying to mess anything up. I just want to fit in and have things be just like they were before I got here. So I think everybody understands the kind of precious nature of an NBA locker room culture. And
there it is, the buzzword, culture. That's exactly.
Yeah, but they're maintaining it, and I think it's been really good to see. There's been very little, if any, you know, I haven't really noticed any awkwardness in terms of like, you know, this has been Paul George's MVP season, and Russ has talked about it openly, and I think more than anything, Paul's MVP candidacy in his season is just as much of a validation of his play as it is Russell Westbrook's. That this is a guy in Russ who the narrative has always been, you know, what he can't do or who he is. And we're seeing him now play with a second MVP candidate.
Yeah.
If this guy was really difficult to play with, he wouldn't have been able to help facilitate two MVP seasons the way that he has and get one on his own. So we'll see if Paul can continue this push down the final basically 4 weeks of the season, 5 weeks of the season. It's hard to believe that we're at that point. But
yeah, I know. Wow.
Yeah. I think Russ has done a really great job of facilitating that and encouraging Paul to be aggressive. And that's something Paul's talked about, actually, is that Russ really, he gives him that extra boost that, whereas maybe sometimes in Indiana, he could go 5-10 minutes in a game where he sort of floats and is not completely totally engaged.
Mm-hmm.
But Russ has been on him since day one, at the beginning of this season, about ensuring that Paul stays aggressive for all 48 minutes.
Yeah, I think that's something that's, it can't be pounded enough, because right now the story around the league outside the Thunder locker room is about Russell's poor shooting, right? And what do you attribute that to? Is that just being in a funk, being a dad of two newborn twins, or learning how to play in that deferential role? Where, what do you see that coming from?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of factors. I think it started off with not having a training camp, and then But the first like 10 games that he played, he was shooting career best numbers from the field and from the 3-point line. Then he injures his ankle and he misses another few games. Came back and just wasn't quite the same, didn't have quite the same lift burst. The twins were born at about that time, so kind of took him a little while to get back in the groove. February, he shot 45% from the floor, which is higher than his career average. Shot basically right at his career average from the 3-point line. So February, he was much better.
Yeah.
Still averaging triple double. I think the thing with Westbrook is we get so fixated on shooting percentages
Yeah.
for some reason in this league, and it's like, why is that? It's hard for me to understand why that's the only thing that people look at with
It's
his game.
well, yeah, and then especially it's like, why isn't that narrative the same for James Harden? Like,
Or you know, any
yeah.
number of these guys where like, you know, shooting percentage. So is the difference between shooting 43% and 45% for the season that massive?
Yeah.
When you are looking at the totality of what these other guys do, like, is a 2 percentage point difference in shooting percentage really that like massive of a dichotomy to break down? I'm not really sure. So I think that's a little bit overblown. And I do think the people in the Thunder locker room recognize like just the breadth of things that Westbrook does on every given night. And for sure, like there are things to that Russ himself will admit that he would like to be better at. He'd love to shoot the ball a little bit better. He might not say that publicly in an interview, but
He's aware. He's very self-aware.
but yeah, he's very self-aware, but I think he's more aware of situations like last night when he had a bunch of turnovers in the first 3 quarters and then didn't have any in the fourth.
Yeah.
And so I think for him and his game, he's much more concerned with being able to read what's happening in the game, react. He always says read and react. React to it throughout the course of the game,
Yeah.
figure out what the opposing team's doing, and then by winning time, he's making the plays to get the job done down the stretch. And that's what he was able to do against Memphis, even though it wasn't exactly pretty leading up to that.
Exactly. And I do think it's interesting looking at the Clippers Thunder matchup. I mean, they may not have been very enticing, scintillating showdowns, I guess. The Thunder do own the 3 games, 2-1, that the 3 meetings that they've met this far this season. But talking just about the locker rooms and the vibes of the team, being in the Clippers locker room, it's incredibly relaxed and it is open and it's a bunch of young role players. I heard what someone describe it as, like, role players who may not be superstars or all-stars, but they're weirdly good at helping out in ways that they need to. So I do think that the two thing teams kind of share that in common. What's struck you about the 3 meetings they've had so far this season in terms of how the games have played out and maybe what challenges the Clippers might present for the Thunder?
Yeah, well, I think you hit it on the head, and actually, like Paul George would share that scouting report that you just put forth, which is basically they have a lot of really good players, no absolute superstars, but you know, when you have that many players that are just good, there's not a lot of holes or gaps in the team. And I think Doc Rivers has shown over the years that these are the types of situations where sometimes he's at his very best as a coach, is when he has sort of an underdog squad, and they've been really good. Landry Shamet's played great since he's
Oh my
come
gosh,
over,
he's been lights out.
and you know, Danilo Gallinari's been very good all season. Beverly's been solid as he usually is. They obviously love Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And then Harrell's been a revelation off the bench. They're going, the Clippers are, for this sort of blue collar. They're going to be the anti-Lakers. You know what
Yeah,
I mean? They
yeah.
need, in order, and not just off the court, but from a branding perspective, it's like you got to be the blue collar
Like
team.
last season, Celtics almost.
Yeah, in a sense, like they've got to be the opposite of the glitz and glamour.
Yeah.
They're going to be the grunge and like heavy metal.
Yeah, for sure.
And so.
Oh, we got some music?
Sorry.
Amp background noise. No,
I have ESPN.
that really built up your point there.
The dramatic music here. There's a ESPN box score that I just pulled up from the Clippers Knicks game, and that dang pre-roll.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway, I just wanted to up the ante on my dramatic reading of the Clippers season. But anyway, I think what stood out to me about the first few meetings, I think the one early in the season was just the second game of the year.
Yeah.
No Westbrook in that game. Really just a pretty ugly game from the Thunder's perspective. But the thing that the Clippers do better than anybody else in the league is get to the free throw line. And that's been an issue for the Thunder all season long, is fouling. It's, you know, what hurt them really badly in the game against the Philadelphia 76ers.
Okay.
And a couple other games here lately, they've struggled because they fouled too much. Denver, Nerlens Noel fouls out midway through the fourth quarter, and that was a huge turning point. So I think that keeping the Clippers off the free throw line would be a huge, huge factor in this game coming up this week. And then, you know, despite the fact that the Clippers don't shoot very many three-pointers, they're second in the NBA in three-point percentage. Mm-hmm. So the ones they're taking are really good. It's very Spursy way that they're doing that. Spurs actually shoot the fewest three-pointers in the league, but they have the highest shooting percentage. So definitely something to watch out for, I would say. And that's something that the Thunder have to deal with every single night, is defending the three-point line and then defending without fouling. I think if the Thunder do both of those things, they'll be in a pretty good position, despite being on the road on the second night of a back-to-back coming out of that Portland game.
Yeah. They're also both top 10 teams in pace, too. So yeah. I think they're able to hang with each other in terms of the athleticism on the court. I do know that, especially after the All-Star break, when the Clippers basically inherited a bunch of new pieces, that's kind of what you have to do to tread water when you don't have an established offensive identity. But they do have a lot of youth on the team as well. So, and the Thunder are notoriously athletic. So I think that's something I always enjoy, seeing two high-flying teams take the court at the same time.
Yeah, it's a really smart point that you just made there about the Clippers. Like, when you're trying to piece things together and you're trying to get guys acclimated on the fly, the best thing you can do is just score in transition. And so, you know, if you can continue to attack and get into some flow offense where you're not really having to call plays, guys aren't trying to figure out like where they're supposed to be on the floor, and, you know, wandering around, that's so much better. And so, yeah, the Clippers have been middle of the pack in terms of fast break points this year. But, you know, I think that that's something that, as you're saying, they're trying to do at a higher level, which is score in transition. And I think every team is trying to.
Yeah.
The thing they're going to do is they can really hunt threes in transition. Gallinari is so good as sort of that trail man, as a three-point shooter, in transition. And so I think that's something that the Thunder will have to watch out for in that matchup, is just not letting those guys pull up. Jermichael Green's another guy who, coming off the bench, another great addition that they made. He's a guy that can spot up for three as well.
A couple of matchups in particular I'm looking forward to. I mean, Russell on any rookie is always entertaining. What have you seen from him the past three times he's gone up against Shea? Is rocking the baby still a thing? Is Westbrook still rocking the baby?
He's not doing it quite as much, but I think part of the reason is kind of like we talked about with the Grizzlies. Their teams are just not letting him like get some of his spots and post up as much. Like he's been able to attack off the dribble some when they've carved out driving lanes. But they're really packing the paint and preventing him from getting to some of his spots on the block. I will say my guess is that Patrick Beverley will be guarding Russ 90% of the time in this game coming up on Friday. So I'm not sure
if Russ will be on shit. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there will be cross matches that happen. Yeah. That is how it goes. But you know, the Clippers are basically starting three point guards.
Yeah. Doc's loving that three guard lineup. And that's another thing. I do think that the Thunder have the advantage down low, but has Steven been having a funky stretch lately?
He has now actually, he's had three double doubles in a row.
Okay. So he's kind of brought himself back out of it.
Yeah, he had a little stretch right around the All-Star break and a little bit after the All-Star break where the guy had rolled his ankles like three or four times in like the previous 2 or 3 weeks. And so
that's a lot of kiwi on those ankles.
Yeah. He was fine. Like he was good to play and he plays through pain and that kind of thing. But you could just tell he wasn't quite himself, like getting off the floor. But the last couple games, like this back to back, his energy was fantastic. He was all over the place. Against Memphis, he had 22 rebounds, just an unbelievable game from him. His matchup with Zubac is going to be really a critical one because, at least with the Lakers, Zubac really hurt the Thunder.
Really?
Now he was playing in the second unit. So we'll see if Adams can do a better job with him. But definitely something to worry about between him and Harrell. Defensive rebounding has been really an inconsistency for the Thunder all season long.
Interesting.
And most of it's come on long rebounds.
Yeah.
Adams and Westbrook typically are cleaning up the ones around the bucket. But it's the long rebounds, the threes that squirt out and get to about the free throw line. Those are 50-50 balls. And the Thunder has had some nights where they've gotten almost all of them. And they've had other nights when it's really been an issue. That's a problem that almost every NBA team is trying to solve.
Because of the transition, right? When you're fighting the battle of, do you hang around and wait for that long rebound or are you pushing back in transition? So with a fast-paced team like the Thunder, it's like sometimes getting back on D is more important.
Yeah, but Paul George would say that some teams now are sending five guys at the glass offensively to try to prevent the Thunder from getting out on the fast break.
Okay.
So basically they're using offensive rebounding as a weapon to hold the Thunder in place, force all five guys to try to box out and not let anybody leak out into transit. So it's this weird cat and mouse game that's happening right now with the offensive glass. It puts the guards and forwards in a tricky position too with all these three-pointers going up that, you know, traditionally your instincts take you in to the paint. You're taught at a young age that no matter where you are on the floor,
you go for the rebound, crash.
Yeah, go for the rebound, or you just stay in your spot and you box out. But some of these long rebounds, they're hitting in this no man's land.
Yeah.
And so even if you're boxing out on the perimeter, there's enough space. There's so much space left on the floor that guys can get around you and go sneak in for those offensive rebounds. Or if you're sinking in and a little bit lazy on those defensive boards, they're flying over your head. So it's a really tricky situation. And one of the reasons why Westbrook gets so many rebounds is he has this innate ability better than most guys in the league to track and just understand the angles of where the ball is going to fly once it hits the rim. I think that's an underrated skill that, you know, people want to talk about him stealing rebounds. He's the first one to the ball.
Yeah.
And he's already moving to where the ball is going to carry him before it hits the rim.
I think that's your next possibly feature is Russell Westbrook's vision.
Yes.
You know, that is really underrated and not like it's a skill and also a talent that I think you might just have. You don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
you don't like learn it. Maybe you do through experience and your brain just like makes that connection. But I think that there is something innate and instinctual about the way Russ watches the track of the ball and just has this sense of how it's going to carry him off the rim. It's like
read and react.
Yeah. He's like seeing the angles and you know, maybe he's a really good pool player. You know, he's just seeing billiard ball bouncing off of the angles and knowing exactly how to get it.
He'd probably be really good at tennis too. Just like, you know,
Russ would be any sport. Let's just be
he's a freak, man, in the best of ways. Like, it's nuts. Awesome. Okay, so I put together a couple of little like stats, typically over the last 5 to 10 games, and I'm gonna call this segment "Take It or Leave It." So you tell me whether you think these will basically sustain, or you would, you know, bet against them to continue. Yeah. Okay. All right. So over the last 10 games, as I'm sure you are aware, Russell Westbrook is averaging 8.4 3-point attempted. He's shooting 31% on that stretch so far from three. Take it or leave it, Russ, 8 threes a game.
I'm going to leave that one. I think that's been more out of necessity lately, particularly with George out, than what he actually wants to do and what the team's game plan for him is.
Yeah.
I would not expect those numbers, the attempts. Can you? One trend that I would say, though, is that he's been taking a lot more catch-and-shoot threes.
Okay, and that's been a focus from the beginning of this season, right?
No doubt, yes. And he's, for his career, has shot more like 34%, 33% on catch-and-shoot threes, at least over the last 5 seasons or so, since he's kind of entered his prime. This year has been a little bit down, but they're starting to rise and get back to that normal level. If he's taking mostly catch and shoot threes, which is not the case right now, but it's the trend that it's heading towards, I think, that more and more of his threes are catch and shoot. I think the Thunder can live with those 3-point attempts. If you've got Russell Westbrook as a 33 or 34% 3-point shooter and they're mostly catch and shoots, that's fine. The ones that are off the dribble, those are the ones that are a lot more difficult.
Okay, I'm all on board with that one. On the other end, Landry Shamet, over the last 10 games, he's averaging 45% from downtown. I think this pairing of him and Doc is just like a dream come true after Doc was able to work with JJ for a couple of years too. And I know that Rivers is using Landry and some of JJ's old, you know, pin downs and stuff like that. So do you take it or leave it, that percentage from 3-point range sustaining for the young gun?
I'm going to take it. You took the words right out of my mouth. As soon as you brought the point up, I was thinking to myself, he's playing the JJ Redick role. And that's something that's going to be very comfortable for Doc and the rest of these Clippers guys. Run them around off screens. Get him going early in games if you can. That was something that the Clippers always did with Redick, was they try to get him 3 or 4 shots right away as soon as the game started, basically run him off stagger screens, pin downs, all these different things. And I think you're seeing some of that in play with Shamet. I mean, just the other night, hit 7 threes. He didn't make any other field goals, but 7-11 from the 3-point line.
6 incredible. In the first quarter.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, And that's part of the Rivers game plan, is like, you get one of these guys going early, and NBA players will always tell you, if somebody gets confident in the first quarter, it doesn't matter whether they're billed as a superstar or whether they're billed as a role player. If they get confident early, they're an NBA player, and it's going to be really hard to turn off that faucet.
Nick, we have some breaking news from Woj right now. The Lakers and free agent Carmelo Anthony are pausing talks on a possible trade contract agreement unless the franchise makes a turn back toward pursuit of playoffs contention.
Big time. Big time.
Yikes. All of that is just...
Yeah. Woj bombs.
That's a dirty Woj bomb, too. Like, we don't even need to touch on the Lakers right now. And I hope, for the sake of Melo, that he gets a little bit more of a graceful farewell in his NBA career. But I don't think that'll be on the Lakers if this is what's coming out of Woj land.
Yeah, it seems like a little bit out of nowhere to me. And I can't even possibly begin to speculate on those two situations, both Carmelo and the Lakers. So I would just say, you know, nothing to see here. I don't think it was going to happen anyway.
Nothing to see here. Okay, a couple more take it or leave it's here. I already touched a little bit on Steven Adams, but I noticed that over the last five games, he's been averaging a season-high turnovers with 2.6 turnovers over the last five games. That seems uncharacteristic for him. Would you take that or leave that?
I'm going to leave that. I think very similarly to what we talked about with Russ, I think a lot of that has to do with Paul George not being out there. The lane is just so crammed, and so that makes every single catch that Steven Adams has to make much more bang-bang plays. Like, so, you know, he's trying to catch and go up and finish with three guys on him, and you're just bound to have more turnovers that way. They're not coming – the turnovers he's having aren't coming from post-ups and somebody's coming and just ripping the ball away from him. They're coming from, you know, he's rolling to the lane and he's catching the ball, and then somebody's slapping the ball out of his hands as he's going up towards the rim, or, you know, he fumbles it because he's getting bumped by two or three guys on his way down the lane. So my guess is with Paul back in the picture, there's going to be more space down the middle of the lane for him to be able to just catch and operate.
If Paul is out on Friday night, who is defending Gallo and who is defending Landry Shamet?
My guess would be Jeremy Grant on Gallinari and probably Terrence Ferguson on Landry Shamet.
Oh, that'll be fun.
He's chasing him around screens. That's been Ferg's biggest thing this season. He's been really great. I mean, he's a second-year guy, so he's picked up some fouls, but he's been great chasing guys around screens. He's taken on some of the very best shooters in this league at that two guard position and doing a really nice job staying with them as much as he can.
All right. Wonderful. Last take it or leave it. One true or false, or take it or leave it. One of these big fish will be playing on the Clippers next season. Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Kemba Walker, or Jimmy Butler?
I'm going to say take it. One of those guys will definitely be on the Clippers next year.
All right. I like it. That's what we like to hear over here in LA.
But, you know, I have no idea. But I think the Clippers are an attractive location. They're good front office, good ownership group, seem to be galvanizing some energy. They've got some really nice young players. I would not be surprised to see one of those guys sign with the Clippers this summer.
All right, awesome. Nick Gallo, the Renaissance man for the Oklahoma City Thunder. He writes, he is sideline reporter, he's doing color for the OKC Blue. Nick, where can they find your work, and where can they follow you and all that jazz?
So if you've got NBA League Pass, you can check out our games on Fox Sports Oklahoma. I'm doing sideline reporting for every single one of our games here coming down the stretch of the season and then first round of the playoffs. And then OKCThunder.com, you can check out all my writing. At OKCThunder is all of the Twitter and social handles that we post articles, videos, that kind of thing. And then my personal handle, if you want to get at me for any reason, it's at Nick Gallo 22.
Awesome. Nick, thank you so much.
Yay,
it's been a pleasure. Nick and Nikki Show, the first ever installment.
Volume one. In the books.
Thank you so much for joining us, Nick. Go follow him. Go read his work. And remember, you can find this podcast, the Clippers Beat Podcast, wherever you get your pods at, or at clns.com. Thanks, and have a fabulous Monday.